Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
LeBron James with no regard for human life. Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall. You know, we talk a lot about all sorts of different sneakers on this podcast and on this show throughout the years. We're 6 years-ish in, almost 600,000 downloads, which I appreciate everybody tuning in all the time, supporting the people that we have on the show. And it's been my goal to kind of expand people's horizon or expand people's knowledge when it comes to sneakers, because as much as I'm guilty of having all these massive brands on the wall and having all these, you know, look, the Black Cement 3 for me is a super important shoe. I love that shoe. It's always going to be on the wall for me. But I also have been really lucky to work in this business for 20 some odd years now, and to be able to see some of the people that don't get the shine that I think do deserve some of that shine, especially now that we were kind of segmented from each other within the sneaker world, which is, you know, kind of why I started this new newsletter to kind of bring back conversation around sneakers, but also to just like have a place where people can like engage and talk and not feel like an algorithm is taking them out of the picture. Because I feel like so many of us feel disconnected, even though if we ran into our friends from Instagram, friends from, you know, whatever platforms, and saw them in person, we would be chopping it up just like normal. So it wouldn't necessarily be, it just doesn't feel like the way it should be on the internet right now. And that is kind of why I wanted to talk to my friend Mark here. Mark has been on a, I'll let him tell the details, but he's been on a mission, let's say, that I think most sneaker enthusiasts, whether they know it or not, have the desire to do. So Mark started a brand called Saint 65 and introduced his first shoe in 2025 and is working on his second shoe. And I just figured I needed to talk to him to hear about how he did it, because even though I've worked in this business for so long, there's so many parts of the process and the steps to get from idea to concepts to production to selling. It's impossible for everybody to know all those things. So I want to introduce you to Mark, let him tell his story, and we're going to talk a little bit about the shoe that he sent out for me to take a look at, because it's got some details that I absolutely love that I think are really, really like poignant when it comes to like telling a story through sneakers, connecting with your local community to elevate your community amongst the bigger sneaker community. So Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and give everybody a quick intro on who you are and how you got to this point with Saint 65.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. You know, originally kind of just like everyone else, you know, I feel like there's always a time when you're a kid or whatnot, that you became a sneakerhead, if you will, whatever. I know for me, I've told it before, a pair of Griffies I got at Marshall's, probably couldn't afford them when they first came out, and, they weren't even one of the, you know, super popular pairs. They were the Griffey Max 3s with the big strap. They're more of a baseball, you know, you're a baseball guy. Yeah. So originally I saw them on, you know, Griffey wear on the Mariners. And so I had to have those. And ever since then, you know, I've always been, you know, whether it's, you know, going to the Nike outlets from, you know, middle school and high school to get the, you know, stuff that I couldn't afford to, you know, the expensive New Balance that I like now. You know, I think it was 2020 when the brand or company Garrison, who produces, you know, sneakers, did some contests. And I'd never, you know, have no background in design, footwear, anything. Was actually working for Budweiser, I think, at the time. So I worked in the beverage industry for like almost 10 years and just started kind of trying to design some shoes. And clearly I didn't win their contests, but opened the door to meet some people at their company and talk to them about what they do. And so I started in the design process with them. And I guess it was somewhat 2020 is when I started. And then got laid off of a job And so I kind of put it on pause, got another job, saved some money, started it back in 2021, and then finally launched them in 2025. So it wasn't, you know, most people, if they're to try to start a brand, it's not going to take that long. A lot of that's probably the OCD side of me trying to make everything perfect. But yeah, it's an awesome process. You know, the final products, you know, what you always think is going to be the, you know, what you enjoyed the most, but it's honestly, I feel like the process, you know, the 3.5-4 years is, you know, really what kind of drives me to do another colorway. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's an interesting, you know, like I got laid off in 2024, you know, at the, you know, going back to the pandemic 2020, you know, like I was consulting full time. So like, but basically got laid off, like all of my clients essentially in, you know, a 30-day span were like, hey, we don't know what's happening, so we got to cut you and, you know, what you do for us. But, you know, I think that's kind of an underappreciated aspect of all of this stuff for, you know, people having to go through this because, you know, like I kind of said in the intro, I really do think that, you know, people have this desire to create these things, even if they don't really know, like once you've gotten so kind of passionate about something, you kind of always have it there. It just takes that thing. So it's kind of cool to hear like your experience with entering that Garrison contest. And I mean, I'm not necessarily a, you know, like a drawer or a designer like that. Like I'm very much like a written, you know, like,
I mean,
like
I'm not art. Either. That's the cool thing. As much as I didn't even use them to produce it. It's like, I'm super grateful for them to connect me with the people that they did and whatnot. Cause it's like, I'm just like you or anyone else who I drew a picture of a shoe. And, you know, now I've got a shoe. So it's,
yeah.
So I got to have the designers and them to do the dirty work, but you know.
So what was that like in the first part? Like how did you go into it? Like how much of what you wanted to do and like, what was the evolution of, you know, maybe that first couple of drawings that you did and how you started to like understand the materials you were going to use, the styles that you were looking at and that kind of thing.
You know, originally, so my favorite shoe probably of all time is the Air Max One. And so I was drawing. So ironically, like I was telling you about, you know, the layoff. Yeah. So when I got laid off, I just started kind of, you know, I was applying for jobs, but I didn't have a lot to do. So I was drawing. So I just started drawing sneakers and, you know, whatever. I remember drawing a Air Max One, Gel White 3, and a New Balance 997. And I just kind of like looked at them one time. I was like, man, I wish I could kind of like combine these. And when you look at mine, you don't really like see a combination of that. But like you were saying, materials wise, there was a, what was it called? A Ronnie Feig one. It was a hybrid ASICs that he did called the Super Blue. And they had that crazy hairy suede on it. And so I saw that and I was like, I just want to do an all hairy suede shoe. Like, I know it's not the most ideal thing. And if I could go back, I think if I would have not used complete hairy suede, I might have sold a few more. But, you know, I had an idea and, you know, and went with it. And, you know, that's kind of the rest is history on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, like, what is the process like for that, for you kind of just getting into it? Is it, you know, are you picking the materials and kind of working with the manufacturer to say, hey, these are the materials that I want? Or is it like, you've got some sort of an idea of like, okay, this is, you know, where I'm coming into it. And then like, is there a bunch of feedback, a bunch of back and forth for you to get to that final, you know, kind of process and even sampling, like how many iterations did you go through before you're like, okay, we're kind of getting there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the tough part. I feel like I'm going to get long winded here, but
go for it. Yeah.
COVID time was just probably a crazy time to start it, you know? So when I started, I was like, I want to do Made in USA. I feel like whenever I first got a real job and actually started making money, I started buying a lot more New Balance, Made in USA, Made in UK stuff. And so I really liked that, you know, just that high quality sneaker. And originally the Made in USA price was, it was ridiculous, but I was like, you know, if I can do it for this and make 20, 30 bucks, like, I don't even care. I just want to make it here. And by the time we had hit the sample, it was like $300 a pair or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, no, I don't have any friends that are going to buy this. So like, I don't know. And so just kind of pivoted. But, you know, like speaking on materials and stuff, you know, I kind of referenced that ASICS, the Harry Suede, and some other shoes that I had, and kind of just told them, hey, I want, you know, I'd like them to be from Italy. I'd like them to be from this region. This is what, you know, I'd like. And yeah, just back and forth emails for, you know, weeks and months and trying to find the right materials. But, you know, if in a perfect world, I, you know, would love to be able to fly to these, you know, factories.
Yeah.
Well, people do it. That's obviously the way to do it, but time and money isn't always on your side. So, after I decided to not use Garrison, you know, in hindsight, I would have used them because I had no idea getting into sneakers how hard it was to make a pair in the U.S. You know, not impossible, but it's pretty dang close, you know. And so, went to a factory in Portugal. Or a production company, if you will. And they got me a pretty good sample. It took forever. It took almost a year to get one sample. You know, Garrison, it was within like four or five months,
yeah,
which is a pretty reasonable time. And so once it hit about a year, I was like, this is kind of crazy. And was about to make the second sample and their Instagram went blank. And I was like, what is going on? Like, you know, I'm communicating through WhatsApp because it's, you know, Portugal. And about two weeks later, they reached back out there. Like, hey, so sorry. We've had a split in the business of ownership, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're figuring it out, you know, and everything. And it just kept going on and on and on for like probably another 2 or 3 months. I'm like, well, this, I don't know if leaving me out to dry, what's going on? So I'm like a year and a half in, 2 years in full. And so I waited a little bit longer and it just, you know, it was kind of crickets for a minute. So I reached out to a guy from Garrison and he got me in contact with the company that I ended up producing them with. And we went back to China. And, you know, my main reason in doing that is because I had no idea how many I was going to be able to make. I didn't have the capital to front a bunch. So he was like, hey, we can do, you know, whatever. There's no minimum. We can do a pre-order. Might take a little longer. And, you know, that's what I ended up doing for the first pair, just because it was, you know, I don't have a big following on Instagram by any means, but a lot of people were, you know, like, when are they coming out? And it's going on for like a year. And I'm like, I'm about to lose all of this, you know, hype or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I went ahead and did that and they came out, you know, pretty good. I'm fairly happy with them. A lot of hiccups along the way, but you know, it's, I think we had four or five samples that we did, just with the China factory. So counting Portugal and the Garrison made in USA, it was like six to seven samples before.
Wow.
I released. And lots of that's probably the OCD-ness on my side. And some of it's just little tinkering, you know, things that just weren't right that you have to, you know, correct. And you don't realize, oh, this is why a new shoe that comes out cost $200. It's not because the shoe costs that much money to produce. It's because they have this much money in R&D and sampling and 100 employees. It's just, kind of open my eyes to the big brands of the world, not judging them as much for the cost of the shoe, just because it's not as simple as, oh, it cost them $40 to make the shoe, you know?
Yeah. So across those six or so samples, like what does the price variation look like, you know, between all of those? Because are you, you know, obviously if it's made in the USA, you're talking a lot higher. Portugal, I'm assuming, is probably higher than China. You know, are there also, you know, difference in prices in those variations that you did towards the end, if they're minimal, or is it all kind of like you're always paying that, you know, same chunk of money each time?
So the ones, the production companies I use, it's mainly upfront fee, and they're, you know, even if you have even your patterns and stuff, they almost kind of still want to create new patterns for, you know, just dialing in, I guess. But it was kind of like, you know, here's your payment. Say it's between $2,000 to $4,000. We create your patterns last, whatever. Here's your sample. And then most of them would give you a second sample for free. And then after that, you're probably paying, you know, $150, $200 for another sample. But yeah, it's when it comes down to the pricing, like you were saying, I think it's more, since I wasn't hitting a minimum, you know, number, that's why they cost me so much. So it's like, if you can go in and guarantee you're, you know, getting 300, 400 made, you're going to get a much better deal than I did in China. So it's like with Portugal, the price is pretty close to what I did the shoes for in China, but I'm making 100 pairs. So I'm guaranteeing them 100 pairs. So like, okay, you know, here's your price versus China is saying, look, if you only make 20 pair for us, like, we're not making any money. So they're going to, you know, upcharge you on that. Yeah. But, you know, I guess it just varies, you know, factory to factory, and, you know, really the minimums that you're hitting is what I've dealt with personally.
Yeah. I mean, the quality of the shoe is really nice. And I wonder, so we're kind of on a hiatus right now, but we were doing this Cars and Kicks show with my friends Jacques Slade and Eric Valdez, who are like, you know, kind of connecting cars and sneakers. And we talked to Aaron Cooper, who's like a, you know, like a designer of, you know, dozens of famous Nike sneakers. And one of the things that stood out in that conversation for me is just how, like, you know, how valued, or how much he valued the manufacturers in China and the relationships in China. Because, you know, obviously in America, we have, you know, we have all sorts of systems that are like designed to make us think a certain way. And yes, when you're going to buy stuff from the dollar store and it's made in China, it's a dollar, you know, like, but it's not like a sneaker. And that was part of what he was saying, is like their ability to make footwear in the right places. They've been doing this for generations, so many generations, that they've been in existence longer than we as a country have in America. And that's like stuck in my head, because I think we all have some bias, no matter whether we think so or not, right? It's just kind of the nature of the world we live in. But then, like, when I saw the shoe and, like, you know, knowing what you were going through, what you had gone through, and kind of, you know, following along the journey and catching it up with you a little bit here and there, it really, I don't want to say that it's not, that there's not better quality available, right? Because it's like, obviously, if you have no budget limitations, you can spend however much money you want to make the most perfect, you know, whatever shoe. But, you know, I would have not, had I not known what you went through, I would have not thought twice about the quality of the shoe at all. Like, it is a really nice shoe. And I wonder how you feel being on the other side of that, going through all of that process. Was there, you know, moments where you're like, this is much better? Am I, you know, like, did you feel differently about it? Because obviously, you know, you mentioned wanting to do something made in the USA, and me being a big New Balance fan as well, you know, the made in the USA stuff is just so nice. And it just, it kind of is like, I wish. There are times where I think of those shoes and wish that that quality and care went into some of the other shoes that I buy that are, you know, your run of the mill retros or whatnot. So how do you think about that now that you've gone through this whole process?
I mean, I'm, like you said, you know, China tends to get a bad rap, and I did a video on Instagram kind of recently, you know, just telling about my brand and talking about wanting to make the shoes in Portugal. And then I kind of have like a disclaimer at the bottom. I'm like, look, I know China is, you know, incredible, you know, with, you know, the technology they have, top of the top, like, they do technically probably make the best shoes. But if you're a small guy like me, I think it's tougher, because one, if you don't hit the correct minimums, your prices are higher. But it's like, if, you know, if you can fly out there and meet the people, you know, I think it's one thing. But, you know, if some people were just going on Alibaba and throwing them a tech pack and a pattern, it's like, it's so hard to even, you know, get their, what's it called? Like the, not the qualifications, but like they can send you, the factories can send you like their, you know, how much overtime their workers have worked, and like, they can send you full breakdowns and like these big brands, lots of these guys are, you know, the Nikes of the world and everything. They're probably doing everything as ethically as they can.
Yeah.
But for me, it was very hard to get the information. So it was almost like, look, I know the shoe looks great, but I'm still somewhat skeptical about the ethical side of who's making these, like, because I've tried to get so many updates on like pictures and like, can you give me this? And it's like, why aren't they sending me these? Are they scared? I don't want me to see the shape of the factory, you know, like, and so it's like, it's hard when you see these big dudes like, you know, Salehe Bembury and all these people over in China working with like the nicest of nice factories, all these behind the scenes shots. And I'm like begging over here on WhatsApp to get a picture of just raw materials and I can't get that. So it's like,
yeah,
I'm not like a, don't work in China. You're, you know, doing it the wrong way if you do. It's just, I feel like it's just hard for the small guy to get transparency. So it's like, for instance, Portugal, you know, I can video call them, talk to them on WhatsApp all the time. And anytime I really want to hop on a call, they just hop on. And so it's like, that part has been, you know, really nice. And, you know, they're pretty upfront with cost and everything. But yeah, I mean, like you were saying, yeah, at first I was kind of like, dang, I just made this awesome USA made sample with Garrison. Now I'm back to square one, 2 years, 3 years later with China. Like, is this quality? Is this going to set me back? And, you know, sure enough, they came and they were super nice. But yeah, I think it's just a personal thing where it comes to, hey, I'm, you know, getting into making shoes, but in the end, I don't even think you're really, unless you're like, you have investors, you have a lot of money and you're going in saying, oh, I'm making 1,000, 2,000 pair in China. You're probably not saving as much. And so that's a big misconception, I think, is people think, oh, you made your shoes in China. These probably cost $40. It's like, no, they're over $100. Yeah. Like, because I'm doing only 60, 70 units, like they're not cheap. So it's like, when you're cranking out big numbers, like the big guys, yeah, you can get them for $40, but you know, you got to have your margins. And when you're only doing small numbers like me, it's tough. So it's, I think I found a good spot in Portugal, and, you know, I would go back to China if it was the right factory, right time, you know, doing bigger orders, but it's just, it's so complicated. I used to be so judgmental whenever I first got into it of like, why don't all these other companies do it? And I'm like, well,
yeah.
One, the workforce, we don't have a lot of people that know how to make shoes. Like, you know, New Balance is the only big brand do it in America. So it's like, if Nike were to hire, you know, 5,000 workers, where are they getting them? How much are they having to pay them? It's just, it's so much more complicated. So
yeah,
I try to give a little bit of, you know, leeway to the big guys now that I've at least done a small portion of making shoes.
yeah. It's also one of those things that I think about a lot too, with like the idea of, you know, I know that there are little moments where brands will, you know, make something in the USA or try to go down that path. But to your point, like 5,000 people, you know, like they hire 5,000 people, there's a long runway for that learning curve.
Yeah. Who knows, maybe more than that. I don't know.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. That's a really interesting, I think too, like, you know, to your point, you know, you want to see the process, you know, from an ethical standpoint, but also on a, you know, just on a personal marketing side, you want to be posting that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So you want to have a like much better relationship with those people. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I think maybe even they understand, right? And, you know, like, yeah, it is interesting because I never really thought about the idea of, you know, the minimum order quantity, you know, impacting so much of that too? Because it could just be that it's like, you know, oh, you're ordering 60, 70, 100 pairs. We don't do all those things for the 60, 70, 100 pair orders.
We've got
people ordering 5,000 or whatever.
Yeah. So. I wouldn't say I know that's a fact, because there are some bigger, well-known, independent sneaker brands, sneaker guys, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I've used, and I've seen Instagram, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, I get it. I know their numbers. I know they're doing a lot more than me. So maybe, you know, there's a little favoritism in it, but, you know, it is what it is. You gotta do more. Just gotta do more numbers, I guess. So
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of an interesting, like, you know, the separation between, like, you know, starting out and like success. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying in the intro, right? Like, this segmentation of our consumption of information around footwear, or, you know, anything really, but just specifically sneakers, you know, like, even, you know, I've worked at a lot of places that was a part of telling these stories, like your story, where I had like a big company behind me. We didn't have massive budgets or anything, but, like, you know, Soul Collector in the magazine days, and Complex back in the day, and even StockX to a certain extent, you know, like, we get to, you know, you get to like be a part of potentially onboarding a product that wouldn't be on there otherwise. And I think that's such an interesting piece of the puzzle that existed for, you know, a solid 5 to 10 years there, whatever it was. And then it just kind of disappeared, where we're all on Instagram, you know, and maybe you're on other social platforms, but, like, primarily Instagram is like where most of the sneaker community spends their day scrolling, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of people on Facebook. There's a lot of people on Twitter. There's a lot of people on, you know, Substack and all these other platforms now, but, like, there's not a shared conversation across them. And, you know, like, even thinking about brands creating a bunch of content and hiring content, you know, creatives, and making their content, whether it's the sneakers app or Adidas or whomever, everybody's wanting you to be in their world. But, like, it takes away from, like, the growth of everything, because we're all in these different places. Yeah. And it's really interesting to think about that and how that affects just, like, the, you know, the moments that we get to celebrate as a community. And not to say that we're all, like, you know, getting together and having a party because somebody launches a new shoe, but it's like, when you see moments, when you see, like, information that spreads throughout the sneaker world, most of the time now, it's either the same press releases from the big brands regurgitated, yeah, or it's, you know, some terrible quick clickbait type story that, like, yeah, you know, somebody, you know, ate cereal out of their Fruity Pebbles, or somebody,
yeah,
ate, you know,
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, somebody screwed somebody, yeah, over, somebody's fighting with somebody, mm-hmm, some, you know, it's like, it's all drama. And it's like,
yeah,
I feel like that, you know, just isn't healthy for us as human beings, but it's also just not healthy for us as, like, enthusiasts in this space,
yeah,
because you don't get to see the little things, you know, like I mentioned, you know, before we started recording, you doing the baseball laces, which I'll let you get into in a minute here, but, like, you doing something like that is, like, it is, like, very specific, you know, you being into that Griffey, the third Griffey shoe, like, that was the one Griffey shoe that I always wanted, you know, but I just never got it. I played baseball, and, you know, like, that was the shoe that I was like, whoa, that's, yeah, like, you know, Griffey's never really looked like the rest of the baseball shoes back then,
mm-hmm,
but, like, those were, like, I always love straps. Like, I like the Nike, yeah, Air Raid. That's one of my favorites, you know? So, like, that was always the shoe that I was like, one day I'm going to get those, kind of. Yeah. And of course, that's one of the shoes that has basically never come back either.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think it's ever retro. I think it's,
yeah,
all,
I don't think so.
One or two has, but.
And every once in a while I'll see, like, an old beat up pair on eBay, and I think, you know, that'd be cool. But it's like, I'm not trying to buy another pair of, you know, shoes that I'll never see after I,
yeah,
you know, look at them for a day or two and then,
exactly,
forget I had them. I am, mm-hmm, trying to do better about storytelling with what I've collected over the years, but it's also, like, part of the challenge for me on that side of things is, like, you know, it's, everything is so nuanced with it all that there's no through line for a lot of people, and a lot of people aren't going to find the story. Like, I love shoes, and I love writing about shoes and photography and all this stuff. Like, I just like, you know, meeting people like you that are doing this stuff, because it's like, it's cool for me.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to like monetize that aspect of what I'm doing. You know, like, of course, there are times when I get hired by a brand or a retailer or some business to like help them do something, or I've worked for tons of them throughout the years. But it's changed so much in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, where a story that I think is really great, you know, it takes so much longer for that to get traction and get in front of the right people. And, you know, it's one of those things where like part of where I'm coming from with it too, like kind of repositioning myself, is like trying to support, you know, guys like you that are doing this stuff that so many people could learn from, you know, like, not to say they're not going to make the same mistakes or different mistakes, but like,
yeah,
we just don't have these stories because we see, you know, a big name that's already done this for the last 10 years or 15 years. And here's another shoe release with them. And like, exactly. That's not realistic for most people.
Yeah.
So like, how do we have more of these conversations? So that's kind of where the podcast is kind of coming in for me right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, for you, like, I know we talked, I don't remember when we first talked. It was a year.
It was when you, so you had got laid off, and I think I had reached out on Instagram.
Okay, that's what it was. Yeah.
I mean, I just got laid off too.
Yeah. Some,
you know, trying to launch this sneaker brand, and, you know, I was trying to, you know, possibly work with you, and just got laid off, you know, budget was low, and didn't work out, but, you know, kind of stayed connected. So.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit, because we kind of jumped right into the process of making the shoe. But like, talk about, like, I guess a little bit of your background, where you're from, what you're doing. And, you know, like, obviously Saint 65, the name too, like all these things that maybe people that are listening to this show might not know about.
Yeah. So the name, it, you know, basically I wanted it to be something that kind of just represented it, you know, my roots, just where I'm from. Born in Alabama, South Alabama, Mobile. And then I moved to East Tennessee, right outside Knoxville. It's called Maryville. No one probably knows about it that would ever listen to this podcast, but, spent like half my life in each area, but I didn't want it to be, you know, some name that was super targeted towards, you know, one or the other. And I grew up a Saints fan. And so my dad's from New Orleans. My grandparents lived there. And then, you know, I also wanted to be, you know, a brand that eventually, I mean, I do give back 1% to charities now, but I wanted the name to be something that could also kind of mean, you know, kind of stand for that, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no saint of a human, but Saint, and being a Saints fan, I figured, you know, why not? And 65, so basically I-65 goes from Mobile to almost Chicago, I think like Gary, Indiana. And so I've always lived off of 65. And so that's kind of the, you know, just keeping my roots on 65, Saint 65, just kind of came to me one day and stuck with it. So what else were we saying? I can't remember what else the question was.
Oh yeah. Just, I guess like, you know, your background, the brand name, I think too, like maybe talk a little bit about like the other stuff that you've been making too. Cause obviously you've done, you know, socks and tees, hoodies, all the other kind of things that are not connected to sneakers, but
yeah,
you know, like we're going to be worn with them. And then I guess like get into kind of the, we can get into the baseball connection with the laces and even just some of the design, choices that you made with it.
Yeah. I would say kind of background, like you were saying too, you know, I worked in the beverage world for almost 10 years. And it was just layoff after layoff after layoff. And it wasn't, you know, anything crazy. It was just numerous times, big companies. I worked for Anheuser-Busch and got laid off from them twice. And that's just part of the game with working with the big guys. And then I worked for a craft brewery in Kentucky, and that layoff was during COVID. So that's kind of when I got into, you know, the Garrison stuff, like I talked about earlier. And then I guess the baseball side of things too, I was going to say, so kind of the backstory too, I played baseball through college. And so that's really why I wanted to do the laces deal was, you know, I wanted to do, after I found out I couldn't do, shoes in America, I wanted to kind of keep as, you know, close to home as possible. And so I was doing research and didn't even know that the factory for the laces for Rawling was, you know, about an hour and a half east of us. And so reached out with them. It's kind of a weird process with them. You really have to go through like a distributor. So they sell most of those laces. They sell them to people that are like in the equestrian. Like I use them for like horses and lacing and stuff like that. So it was kind of weird having to get a hold of those. But yeah, the baseball side, I knew you were a big Giants fan, and I figured you would appreciate that. Not a lot of people probably did. And to be honest, the other laces that come with them kind of fit better, but you know, it's kind of one of those things. Once you start a story with the shoe, you kind of just got to roll with it. And it was a super cool, addition to me, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think, I don't know if I said this in the beginning or if I said it before we started recording, but might have to repeat myself here. But I think one of the things that like when I got these, like, you know, I open up the box and I'm going to put a video on YouTube by the time this comes out, but basically open it up and I immediately saw the laces. I remember our conversation, but like it wasn't like fully in my brain when I opened it up, so, and I was like, oh, you know, like, and you know, the thing that I love about something like that, and I think that, you know, yes, like the big brands get to do all these fun, unique things because they have all the money, right? They can put a logo on something, they can change colors, they can give you 10 sets of laces. It doesn't really, you know, it's a few cents off of every pair or whatever that they end up, you know, making when they're making tens of thousands of pairs. But when I saw the laces, it was like, that to me is like one of those things where, you know, I haven't played softball in a long time, haven't played baseball in a long time, but like literally just bought my girlfriend a glove like a couple of weeks back at one of the thrift stores. So we were going to go play catch actually in this next few days, hopefully. And it's just one of those things where like, I think of that as like the gateway, not the right term, but the gateway drug to sneakers are stories like that, are like me wearing this shoe around, whether it's at a Giants game or around town, and somebody saying, oh, what are those? You know, and then I'm like, oh, you got to check out these laces. Like, are you a baseball fan? And then next thing you know, like all of a sudden I got a new friend. All of a sudden I've got like this, you know, there's this whole energy that comes around with those little tiny stories that, you know, and it's unfortunate that like those types of stories don't get out there as much when you're obviously a smaller, you know, you just starting out. But it's so poignant for me in having these conversations. So I hope that people that are listening to this or watching this or whatever, they see it, you know, kind of understand like that wow factor is such an important piece to it. And to your point, like, I think a lot of people when they're starting out, you know, they seem to dismiss some of the ideas to fit into the box of like, I'm going to make this thing. And I don't mean that to be mean or anything. Sometimes, sometimes you're thinking about the price, the minimum order quantity. I'm sure there's so many things that go into that thought process of like, how do I even get these laces? You know, like how can I continue this? And like,
That's another story too. Like funny story on that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Go for it.
I was just saying, so it was just a crazy, so the tongues too. So the tongues, I used some hemp material, which is, I think it was made in North Carolina, sold out of a big fabric company in Pennsylvania, but dyed those with local indigo that I had found out. I got into the selvage denim stuff back in, you know, whenever, and this company out of Nashville makes you know, a lot of salvage denim and all kinds of stuff. They dye with the indigo that's grown like literally right down the street. And so I found that out. I guess it's really cool. And so that was kind of another thing I wanted to keep the, you know, stuff local. And so we sent that to Portugal, sent laces, indigo material to Portugal, didn't work back, sent it back to America, sent it back to China. The shoes show up without the indigo dyed tongues.
Oh.
And they were like, well, they look good. Like, do you still want them? I'm like, man, I was like, I spent almost $1,000 on this material. And I've been telling people this is what is on the shoe for almost 4 years. He's like, okay, like we'll make it work. And somehow they resewed, took tongues out, made new tongues, just crazy, you know? And so that, you know, end of the day, I tell people it's kind of an insane shoe that the laces and the material, I've literally went to Portugal, back to America, to China, back to America. It's just nuts. Like how, yeah. You know, and that's why I would tell people, yeah, if you're wanting to design your first shoe, probably don't do anything as crazy as this, but you know, in the end it all worked out. So
yeah,
you know, the details matter. So
totally, man. Totally. And so I'm drawing a blank on the name of the shoe. It's the SV1, right? And then,
yeah.
And what did you call this particular one? The colorway?
Well, the Radici. So I just,
that's right.
I sat and tried to think of like colorways and all kinds of stuff for so long. And one of the kind of like the slogan of the brand has always been remember your roots. And so that just means roots in Italian.
Yeah.
My grandparents came over, great grandparents came over from Italy to Brooklyn, like late 1800s, early 1900s. And so I wanted to kind of throw a little extra family tie into the name or the colorway. So,
yeah, that's awesome, man. So now that you've been through this whole journey, you know, like what do you look at? Like, how do you think about going forward? You know, is it the shoes are live, right? You still have the shoes up, you know, I assume.
Yeah, there's one or two pairs left. So basically when I did the pre-order, I did everybody who ordered through Shopify or like local friends and family. And then I just set, you know, I want to order 15, 20 extra pair, did that, yeah. Kind of just, you know, launched on the site after that again. So.
And you end up doing the Vibram outsoles. You kind of like what was that process like? How did you go into it thinking like, this is what I want to do? You knew, did the gum outsole on this colorway. You kind of already have that in your mind as you were going into that part of it?
Yeah. I knew I wanted to do the sole. And that's another thing too. It's getting back into the, you know, nitty gritty of it all. You know, I have the shoe right here, actually, I was wearing earlier. So this sole, you know, I had no sneaker knowledge of, you know, the design side of anything. You know, it's a more narrow shoe. And so my foot is not honestly that narrow, but I've spent so much money developing this. It's like, I feel like I have to rock a couple colorways of it. But yeah, when Garrison, when they did their contest, you picked from like a handful of the Vibram soles. And so, I didn't even pick those in the contest. I don't know. I can't remember the other ones I used, but kind of went through their catalog and used those. And so it's really kind of a crazy process using them. So Italian company, some of their stuff's made in Italy, some of their stuff's made in Boston, some's made in China. And so those soles specifically are made in China. And so when you get your shoes made in China, you do the order. So like if you're to make a pair, you get on the internet and you order everything through China. And so they have to like approve your sneaker. So unless it just looks terrible, I think they probably approve it. But, you know, now going to Portugal, I don't order the soles anymore. They go through like a broker. And so it's like, it's kind of wild using them. Enough using them because, you know, there are a lot of sole options in Portugal that I could use, but obviously I've, you know, made one silhouette with them and, you know, they're the top of the top. If you're, you know, whether you're a big brand creating your own molds with them or you're just using the open sole collection. I hope to continue to use them. You know, they've been great. They're really easy to work with. They get you samples relatively quickly. I had the one factory did try to convince me to use something else because, you know, sometimes it can take 2-3 months to get your soles in for production. So then you're sitting there waiting for the sole, you know, so it draws everything out. And that was, you know, part of our probably issue that didn't help us getting them here quicker, but, yeah, it's complicated with the soles for sure.
Yeah. It's crazy to think like, you know, if you were doing this at a level that a brand that, you know, has the resources to be churning out multiple, you know, styles or colorways or whatever, yeah. like just the amount of just potential delays, potential problems, decision-making. Like it is just, the more you talk about it, the more it's just like, man, this is like a like so many headaches, you know, yeah. just to like even get there. And then when you do get there, it's like, well, you didn't think about these other headaches and, mm-hmm. and like whatever. So like, I can't even imagine like trying to, you know, you kind of always hear like it takes 18 months for a shoe to get produced as like a general statement in the footwear industry.
Yeah.
And like, then once you start to understand that, it's like, yeah, it's so like, you know, yes, you could produce faster or, you know, maybe you could do something in a, you know, in a different country and turn things around. But like, there are so many potential, you know, challenges that you're going to run into no matter how you slice that. It's like, it makes sense that the general consensus is, yeah, 18 months, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I think that's probably a good, mine was drawn out for crazy, you know, crazy reasons and scenarios. But yeah, I think 18 months is probably pretty accurate. Like you said, like, yeah, if I had 200, 300 grand, yeah, I could probably get with Vibram, make a custom sole and crank out yeah. a couple of colorways and throw some marketing and really, really be able to, you know, launch a brand like that. But yeah, it's tough, but you know, for them to be able to offer the opportunity for just a me or anyone else out there to say, hey, we've designed a shoe and they allow you to use their silhouettes that they design is pretty awesome, because there's, you know, there's some big brands that have used, that specific soling unit from Vibram, you know? So
yeah,
it's pretty cool to work with them.
Yeah. So like, you know, going forward, what are some of the things that now you're like, okay, you know, what would you change? What would you do differently? But also what, you know, like what are the things that you're like, oh, I really, really happy about the way that came out. And like, that's going to be around the next time I try this.
Really that, like you were saying, the soul, I, you know, I want to, so the whole, and I, I know, you know, this, but people who I'd say most people probably listening to this podcast probably understand what the last is, you know, lots of the brands. So it last comes first. And so the last, you know, is the shape of the shoe. And so you can tweak the last and make it a little bit less, you know, pointy and narrow, but to that specific, you know, silhouette, like you can't go too much over here, you know, so it'll get,
yeah.
So, you know, eventually I would like to use a different sole. And I've been working on some different designs. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's too much I would change other than just knowing, like if I would have just stuck with one factory and wrote it out, AKA Garrison wrote it out with their China factory, that probably would have been the best. But you know, you live and you learn as a, you know, random person who just decided to make shoes on a whim. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you have plans to do a second colorway? Is that something you're looking at doing?
Yeah. So that second, yeah, the gray one.
Okay.
I've got a gray pair that's, over here, actually not trying to pump everything on here. I feel like this is a little marketing scheme, but it's really not.
No,
so it's the same exact shoe.
Yeah,
it's the same exact shoe. You can tell the shape's a little different. That's, you know, this is the Made in Portugal one, but you know, I want to do a couple more colorways with them, just because the biggest part is that whenever you develop, you pay all the costs to develop all the lasts and all the pattern tweaks and everything. So it's like it varies so much, but you're anywhere from, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 in trying to develop this one. You're like, I have to at least do a couple of colorways. And as long as we can nail the new last and the shape be good and I'm, you know, happy with it and the quality's there, I definitely want to do at least one more after this gray one. We'll see how it is. You know, I originally kind of wanted to do two a year, and I think I started, you know, maybe not calendar year, but just, you know, year.
Yeah.
Started with this sample or this colorway back in like October. So.
Okay. Yeah.
We're 6 months in and not even close to production. So I should not close. We're pretty close. but just, it's just hard to always plan as the small guy because it's just time consuming. It's like, you know, if I were to be able to fly over to Portugal, they'd probably be able to make a sample for me that week, you know, because they have so many bigger clients that they're working with. You know, it just is what it is. And I understand that I'm not the priority for them. So, you know, it might take them a month or two every sample. So if that's that, you know, that sample came in late January, I think, or early February. And they said they're close to getting the next one. So I'd say end of the month or so. So it's almost to probably 2 months. So fingers crossed that one will, they'll nail that one. And then, you know, it's like I was saying with the Vibram, it's going to take them a month or two to get the soles shipped to Portugal. So, you know, I'll probably be a whole year. And so then it'll be, you know, my second shoe will have taken a whole year as well. So we'll see. I try not to jump the gun on it, but if I can, I think if I can get dialed in with them, then it's easy. I can just, you know, go into new colorways with new materials because they have that exact pattern shape dialed in. And, you know, and if I wanted to stick with China, I could have released one or probably two colorways by now then, but I just, you know, I just wanted to change it up and go back to the, and I should say as well, so I didn't cover this with the split of the Portugal factory. One of the owners kind of just left me out to dry, and the other one had reached out after the other one had told me that they had split, and it was like, hey, we're so sorry, you know, whatever. We'd love to, sorry, maybe you're choking. We'd love to make you a sample. And I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I've actually already committed to another factory because it had been 2 months at this point. And they were super understanding. They were like, yeah, no worries at all. We'll still send you the sample. And the sample was great. And I was kind of like, dang, man, like I wish I would have stuck with them. And so that, long story short, after the release of the first shoe, I went back to them. I said, hey, the, you know, sample's incredible. Like, what do we do to move forward? And so I went back to them. And so it's an established relationship, but it was just weird how it all worked out with them. But I'm glad to be with them. They're really good. So.
Yeah. Also just a good sign too, right? Like that, you know, the person that kind of just brushed you off, you know, you almost feel like maybe you filtered out some of the, let's say, the worst parts of that partnership by having them reach out on the other side of it too, which is nice. You know, I think that's something that, you know, I think, you know, you're talking about a lot of the challenges that I think a lot of people inherently know are issues with manufacturing just across the board, but don't really understand the depth of how much of a challenge can exist.
Yeah.
You know, with manufacturing overseas and, you know, like obviously, you know, you mentioned it earlier, but it's like, you could do this at home in the USA and you could have, you know, somebody make this here, but then how many people are really spending $300-$400 on a pair of shoes, you know? And like, it would be nice if we could get to that point where we could make shoes, you know, but you know, it's hard. We're not heading in that direction anytime soon. Yeah, I don't think as a community, culture, industry, whatever. But hey, so I don't know if this is really like relevant for the sneaker listeners, but I'm curious, you know, like as somebody who does a little bit of, you know, like embroidery work and creative stuff outside of the sneaker stuff, do you look at like that kind of stuff in more detail now versus, you know, I mean, even maybe 4 or 5 years ago when you started this stuff?
Yeah, for sure. It's, so one, I'm like hypercritical on myself on the embroidery side, cause that's, you know, my main job is doing that. But then I'm also like very, feel like understanding whenever I do see, cause it's like, I'll go to a store and I just start like, I catch myself like at, whether I'm at Nike or, you know, J. Crew, wherever I am, I'm looking at stuff. I'm like looking at the embroidery. I'm like, oh, that's not that great. And I'm like, why am I even doing that? Like, they're doing it just as good as I am. And then whenever I mess up something, it's like, I'm so hard on myself. But yeah, I've tried to give these other companies grace and stuff. Cause I used to look at like, so like tons of brands, but like, that's like, even the shoes I got produced, I'm like, man, some of these are kind of off. And I'm like, it's such a hard embroidery, such a different, it's not like screen printing where it's just, you know, and screen printing is probably very tough too, but it's a different process because, you know, the needle, every, you know, tension's so, so different. But yeah, it's been, and I was going to, that's something else. I wanted to embroider the tongues, but that was a whole nother process of like, oh, this would be cool. Another cool part of the story. Hey, I embroidered the tongues on the shoes, but then they're like, well, then we'd have to cut them with the, you know, Comel's cutter, whatever, and send them back to you. It just would be a disaster. So
didn't
end up doing that, but.
So I guess that makes me think, like, we've kind of gone through the whole gamut of the shoe, the process, all the challenges you faced. We didn't necessarily talk about, you know, like the packaging and stuff. How did you approach that? Was that something you did locally as well? Or is that something that you were like, you know, do you have the ability to partner with the, you know, the manufacturer of the shoes for that packaging? You know, I've seen, you know, various forms of like the, you know, person who makes their own shoe or, you know, the brands get the big deliveries of boxes and it's all packaged, all, you know, wrapped, but you've got like, you know, you Saint 65 paper in there, got the extra laces. So like, what was that kind of finalizing the, you know, presentation process like for you?
So I know, you know, everybody probably does it different. Who I used, basically what they did was they had, so I had a lot of just family and friends that for some reason just wanted to order directly through me instead of Shopify, which I was fine with. And so when they all came over from customs, they send them the boxes packed flat. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, all the big brands, they're sending huge tons of shipping containers. All the shoes are all packaged perfect, whatever.
Yeah.
They basically pack everything flat, paper, boxes, strings. And then they have the shoes. There's a certain way that they do it, but the shoes are all in boxes, you know, by size, but they're not in the actual boxes. So they're in separate boxes. So basically, yeah, that all shows up from FedEx. And then, so the additional 30 pairs, you know, whatever the ones I sent to you, basically I just had to pack out all the boxes and put stuffing in there and, you know, make it look like a presentable shoe. But yeah, I used the same factory who made the shoes, just kept it pretty clean. I didn't want any crazy packaging. I know a lot of, you know, people, if there's a story to it, they do some really cool stuff. And it wasn't price. It's just, I really liked the New Balance 991, like the UK boxes.
Yeah.
Brown corrugated box. And I just kind of wanted to keep it classic and not be too flashy. So went with that and we'll see. I might change it up on these next ones. Have a little more freedom to do some different stuff with the Portugal factory, but we'll see.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how the next version comes out too. And, definitely looking forward to wearing the pair that you sent. Thank you for doing that.
It's
super impressive quality, man. Like I don't know if it's like just the, you know, kind of like the hairy suede, just like always has a wow factor to me too. Like,
yeah, I've always loved it. I don't know what it is. It's just different. You don't see it along.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you know, for me too, the personal connection to the baseball story and like, that is such a cool element to it, you know? And I hope that people that are listening kind of think more about that as they're, you know, going to spend another, you know, $150, $200 on a pair of shoes. Cause it's like, I don't want to discredit, you know, the people that are working for the big brands, but it's so cool to see someone like yourself, you know, like you're just swimming upstream so much in this, you know, industry, right? To be able to try to even create this to begin with, and to hear your journey and to know like you persevered through all that is like, it's super inspiring to me. And I think it's just a cool way, you know, hopefully people show their support and hear this and are excited to check it out and, you know, maybe sell the rest of those pairs that you got left over from the first one. And
anyone else who wants to, you know, try, I'm always open to talk to people who want to, you know, get into it. Cause that's the fun part. Like you said, the community side,
Yeah. As long as
there's not, you know, there's nowhere where you just can gather with, you know, 50 people that are doing what I'm doing. Cause there's so many people that are doing what I'm doing. But like you said, it's not, it's never on that, you know, Instagram, you just get the clickbait stuff, but
yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so like for the next colorway, have you decided on whether that's a pre-order or is that a, you know, like, well, what's your approach to that? And like, when can people kind of, you know, guesstimate as to when they can see that next colorway coming around?
Yeah. So that's not, I'm not doing pre-order. So the pre-order was, it was fine. It was terrible timing. It was when the China tariff stuff happened, was like literally the week after the order. Ugh. And so it was just, it was crazy. It was nuts. It'd take too long to talk about, but that just took way, way too long. And so I was, talked to the Portugal factory and basically decided, look, they have a minimum, I'll hit the minimum and do, you know, I want to do some kind of like pop-up or some kind of
release. Yeah.
Cause I feel like as a small brand, it's tough to just, you know, post your pictures on Instagram. Here it is. You know, it's just not, you know, I could have done a lot, things a lot differently, I think would have probably helped, sell more pairs. But yeah, with that being said, I would say it's mid March. It's so hard, you know, if all goes well and the new sample comes out in the next or gets to me in the next like 2 or 3 weeks, I would say it'd probably be mid June to have them mid or end of June, they'd probably be here. And so then it just depends how long it takes for me to come up with campaign and photos and whatnot. So hopefully midsummer, release, you know, they're a little more mesh on those and it's a little more of a, I wouldn't say summer shoe, but you know, those other ones are hairy suede and, you know, people started getting them in like mid October. So like the weather felt good. And I know it's like a great, you know, summer shoe, especially in the South, it's super hot and humid. So that's why I went with the mesh. So hopefully they'll be releasing in probably June or so. So.
Cool, man. Well, I'll look forward to it. Hopefully people can check it out. I mean, I definitely would agree. It's probably a good summer shoe. So that'd be some good timing. Yeah. I'll keep my fingers crossed for you. And, I guess like to wrap up, make sure to let everybody know how they find you on all the platforms and that too.
Yeah. So just Saint 65, spelled out. And then that's for Instagram. And then the domain was taken for some weird reason when I started. So it's saintactual65.com for the website. So had to change it up a little bit.
Cool. Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you spending the time to chat with me and, you know, coming on, and I'm looking forward to seeing the next round and seeing how you kind of handle the next set of challenges that you'll probably run into, you know, with this, but, awesome work on this, man. I mean, I think it's a beautiful shoe. Like I know the pictures are beautiful too, but like, I don't think people can really grasp the like texture that, you know, like the depth of the texture of that suede is so
crazy
impressive. So, I'll have some of this up on the Sneaker History channels and stuff. So you can check it out too. And make sure you give Mark a follow over on Saint 65. Thanks everybody for listening and watching. Leave us a review if you haven't. We're trying to kind of get the reviews back rolling in because we haven't had any in a couple of years. So we appreciate y'all and we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.
Thanks so much, Nick.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. If you want more insights into the sneaker world, I've started a newsletter called the Sneaker Newsletter to share my knowledge of over 2 decades experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link below or go to thesneakernewsletter.com. Last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.